The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
I help people every day to improve their health. Sometimes they've had lifelong issues or not fully recovered after a stressful event. The doctors have often run out of ideas. My name is Kevin Davis. Our bioresonance system starts with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments during the same session. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today and make us your first choice for a healthier you.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig, and this is the Herbal Medicine Show brought to you by Hartwood Herbal Education. We've entered December, the first month of winter, where we, in the Northern Hemisphere, replace the lack of external warmth and light with an inner glow of friendship and generosity. We light candles, drink mulled wine, eat cookies, and make an effort to celebrate the light within each of us, whatever religion we find most suitable to our calling. In this week's show, we celebrate inner light and vitality. Ashley tells the story of St. Nicholas and the effect of generosity. He gives his storytelling time in aid of the Emerson Glass Greenhouse Project, a dream of a greenhouse that can create a warm atmosphere in the cold winter months, to allow people and plants to thrive. The Botanic Garden at Emerson, which I'm part of, will use part of the greenhouse to propagate medicinal plants that have been over-harvested to help them prosper again. We've teamed up with a Greek botanic garden, the Balkan Botanic Garden of Crucia, who have spent the last decade collecting specimens of wild native plants that have been driven to near extinction for one reason or another, and propagating them, or domesticating them as they say, to bring them back from the brink. We want to do the same at Emerson, so they are going to come and teach us how. But our partnership is an exchange, so in return we are going to teach them about the medicinal properties of wild plants. If you'd like to support the Glass Greenhouse Project, you can find it on the Emerson website, emerson.org.uk. Winter and December is also a time to reflect and repose, thinking about what has passed and letting go of any grudges, which are all a waste of time anyway. Time to relax and be merry with friends and family, whoever and wherever they may be. It is time for inner journeys through space and time, culminating in more or less unrealistic New Year resolutions and plans for the future. To help you on your way, we have two shamans on today's show, Berta Kunell and Chris Rigwood. I also found a group of lovely young ladies in the meeting room at Emerson, working on a sacred space research project. So beautiful to hear them talk about taking responsibility for the future, ourselves and the planet. Very inspiring and encouraging. I left the room afterwards feeling hopeful for the future. The young generation are so much smarter and wiser than us. Thank heavens. I also rang up my friend and colleague, Christopher Menzies-Troll, and asked him about his book on physiomedicalism, a herbal medicine philosophy that focuses on vitality. And to initiate the season of devotion, good cheer and generosity, I've found some choral music for you, sung by Alegria, a Catalan choir from Vern-les-Bains in French Catalonia, directed by Nick Rowley. They start with my favorite song in the world, El Cant dels Ocells, the Song of the Birds, a traditional Catalan song for the festive season, celebrating all life and birdsong in particular. Welcome to your weekly dose of plant power. You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig, and this is the Herbal Medicine Show. I'm in the South Library in Emerson College, and I have been very fortunate to find two experts in an area that I've always wondered what was, because I've always thought that a medicine wheel was something to do with herbs, that you had different herbs, but I have just about 10 minutes ago learned that it's much more than that. And we have
Berta Kunal
and Chris Rickwood.
And you're both medicine wheel experts. So what is it?
Well, the medicine wheel is really, there's many ways to look at the medicine wheel. One is there is an herbal way of looking at it. And there also is a way when you have it placed on a piece of ground as a way to walk around that wheel or to spend time with that wheel in on a very literal, land-based way of the medicine wheel. The way that we use the medicine wheel is as a transformational journey. And it's an ancient tradition that medicine men and women of all kinds of traditions would walk this journey path, so that they could release from those limitations with which they had previously been engaging their life.
But how do you make the wheel?
It's not a physical.
Ah.
That's what I mean. It's not a physical item.
Right.
It's a journey that you actually walk.
But so how do you get started and how do you know where to go?
It's a transformational journey. And we use the map of the medicine wheel to take that journey. And it's just a map. And like any map, it means nothing unless you actually walk it. And so we start in the south. And in the south, we do that work where we connect with the archetypical energy of serpent that sheds its skin with ease and grace. So in the south, we shed that which is our old story, the old tale that we say about our lives. And we shed the old wounding that we've experienced in our lives, but we take it to a place of incredible richness and incredible beauty, because we take that shedding of the old and allow the richness of the gifts. Our greatest wounds give us our greatest gifts. And if we don't receive those gifts, we can't really transform those wounds. They'll just continue to follow us around. So in the first class, or stepping into the south direction, we step into that place where we shed our original woundedness, and where we recognize that we've always been welcomed in the earth. So many people in our culture, Western cultures, don't have a connection to the earth, don't have a sense of welcome to life, not even the earth as a planet, but just even welcome to life. And in the South, a lot of what people walk out with is a sense of that they've always been welcomed.
Oh.
They've always been really well held.
How beautiful.
And so that south direction has that really nurturing return to the garden feel to it.
Beautiful.
Which then allows you to have the anchoring and the grounding that you need to go deeper, because you can't really look at the deep shadow stuff if you don't feel safe.
No, that is true.
Right.
That is true. And
right.
How beautiful. So that's the start in the
that's
south.
That's the start.
So like the sun, you shine a light on everything from the south is where the light is.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Awareness.
Awareness.
You bring your awareness to everything. You start to realize, what are you creating? What is your life? Who are you?
Yeah. How beautiful.
What is your identity? Yeah.
So from the south, where do you go?
You
west,
step into
east?
The west.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the from the south, you step into the west. And in the West is the place where it's a place of great transformation, a great turning over. And it's a place where chaos can break apart that which has been restricted and allows new reconfiguration. So we look at a lot of the limitations that have come from our family systems or our karmic holding or our deep limiting beliefs and really transform those. And again, from every piece of transformation, the reason I really love this work is every piece of transformation really has its energy in what is the gifts that are being grown here.
How beautiful.
Yeah, because if you don't receive those gifts, that pattern will continue to stalk you. Recognizing that your life is a journey, an incredible journey that you're taking so you can grow gifts, aspects of self, and to be able to focus on that journey and the gifts that it brings as opposed to, oh my God, it's happening to me.
Yeah, I mean, so really the South is that place of where we just bring that awareness to things. You know, we realize what is our life, what are we creating, what defines us, what limits us. You know, you need that awareness before you can step into that next place of the West, where you then go, oh, wow, that thing, that pattern, that limitation that's been pushing me through my life, you know, that feeling of not being safe, that not being worthy, whatever it is, you know, look at the journey, look at the ripples it's had, you know, and actually going, wow, look at this amazing journey, you know, and from there you can start to realize some of those deeper gifts that you've been cultivating quite often unconsciously within yourself. And those are the gifts that we then take forward with us into that next step of the medicine wheel into the North.
How beautiful. And did you say that you talked about the family traditions or ancestors. Yeah. Do they belong in the West? Is that what you're saying?
They do.
The transformation of that belongs in the West, but gifts...
Yeah, yeah.
The great gifts of that belongs in the North.
Yeah, now I understand.
Yeah, the great gifts belong in the North. The North is the place of the wisdom keepers. The North is the place of the rich wisdom and being informed by that wisdom. The lineages, as you separate that out, you take the wisdom forward and leave the limiting beliefs behind.
You leave those behind in the West, get to the North? Or?
And actually, in every single direction, you're separating out that which limits you and bringing forward that which you have grown or supports and nourishes you.
How beautiful.
And so we start in that place of how do we, how do we walk in the world? How have we been walking in the world? Mm-hmm. And in each direction, we're transforming the new way that we walk in the world. But what the energy of the West is that chaos, the breaking apart and the coming together, the life, the death, life, and rebirth cycle.
Uh-huh.
So that cycle of death and rebirth and death and rebirth, that's very West energy.
Yeah.
So, you know, the truth is that when we walk on our journey path, the truth is that we need to be safe to walk.
Yeah.
We need to take our power back from the places that we've given it away.
Yeah.
And allow ourselves to be reconfigured by our own essential.
How beautiful.
And then we need to take that mixture of safety, power, and our own essential and the wisdom, because in the North we work a lot with reinforming from our own essence and from the wisdom of all traditions, and then we bring that forward in the East to new creation and a new
how world. Wow. Mm-hmm. That is brilliant. And that is why it's a wheel.
And that's why it's a wheel,
because it goes round from to south, west, north, east.
Yeah.
And the North is the wisdom.
Is the wisdom, and it's sitting at the top of the mountain with those wisdom keepers that dream in the world from a new place, from outside of the reality of the consensual, and from what's possible instead of what's probable.
How beautiful.
Yeah, and we learn to be those dreamers, those visionaries, and then take that into the world in new ways. And we learn to walk the essential and the richness of who we are, and take that into the world in new ways. And in the East, which is the class that we're currently doing here, it's all about what's the essence of who I truly am? What did I come in here? What did I choose to bring, the richness that I chose to brought into this life, to bring into this lifetime? And how can I be that? Be the frequency of it, be the luminosity of it, be the fullness of it, and shine it out in the world. So we're really looking at our lives in all of the directions as we move through. We're looking from that place of our soul's journey. So if we have an issue or a pattern that arises, we go, why did my soul pick this? What am I growing? So we're looking at the soul's journey and taking the gifts, the qualities, those jewels that we're really growing in our lives and taking our life on journey. And recognizing that our life doesn't happen to us, but it's a place of journey path. We want to see the reflection of our soul's journey to be able to hold ourselves from the place of who we truly are. And then we engage the work at another level, which is the energetic level. And so all of the processes that we use for transformation are energetic processes. But part of it is that you have tools that you can walk away with and use in the future if something comes up. And as you continue to transform, because it really is an ongoing journey of transformation with the recognition that in this present moment you need to be, not just be thinking what's wrong.
Listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig and this is the Herbal Medicine Show.
Well, I looked at the notice board at Emerson and I noticed that it said the Sacred Space Research Project was going on in the meeting room. So I just knocked on the door to ask what is the Sacred Space Project, and I found these six beautiful ladies here that apparently that is telling me are coming from all over the world to work on this project. Do you want to say your names?
Sure, my name is Jante.
My name is Fiorina.
Melanie.
Olga.
Melody.
And Christine.
And how did you end up here at Emerson today on Friday, sunny Friday afternoon, talking about sacred spaces?
Well, first of all, Emerson is a special place, and we wanted together to look at what is actually a collective task that our generation is taking on and can bring, which is actually our generation has the potential of bringing the process into structures and systems and organizations, and a way of working with that we started to call sacred space, where it's actually possible to connect to our deeper sense of being human and our fuller humanity, and to connect in that way with each other.
That's very beautiful that you call it a sacred space, because it reflects someone, the earth is a sacred space, and we have each have a sacred space inside us. Is it, am I understanding right that you're trying to connect the two, so it's a collective sacred space that everyone can sort of tap into, or is that it?
Yeah, it's a sacred space for our processes.
We are working with the philosophy of freedom to live in our thinking. Mm-hmm. One very nice one about freedom is knowing what you must do.
Freedom is knowing what you must do. Gosh.
Yeah, and that's actually what the philosophy of freedom is about. How do I get to know what I must do? What is the right thing to do out of understanding? So it's really a philosophy that develops a very alive thinking that actually can understand the lawfulness of things, and that can receive intuitions on how things actually work and what I can do to bring good into the world. So it's a very different kind of freedom to the one we would think of.
Yeah, it's not just like in the song, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I know what I must do, only then I'm actually free. I can do it or I cannot do it. But if I don't know, if I just act out of impulses or associations or whatever, then I have no clue actually what I'm doing. And in that, I'm also not free.
That is definitely true. Yeah. And you have here a board with a figure of eight or lying on its side, so it's eternity. Who drew that?
Yeah, that's one of the things we are working with. Few of you want to say something?
So is it S and W? Is that south and west or?
No, it's the inner and the outer world kind of.
So what does S stand for and W?
The S stands for self.
Self.
Yeah. And the W for world.
Ah.
So we can kind of see the
how wonderful.
Yeah, or the inner life and the outer life. And this is one of the, this is kind of the archetypal process that we are learning about. And where, you know, you move from up, right, where you receive a call from the world.
Yeah.
You're always awakened by something around you.
Yeah.
And then comes the decision, am I going to take this on? And then we move to the center point, where it's our personal self.
Yeah.
Personal self is the self that relates to the world.
Yeah.
So actually what needs to happen when you really want to take on the call, some transformation needs to happen in that personal self. But that's of course a decision. And then we're talking again about this freedom. Am I going to do this? Or am I going to keep going in circles and not actually go to the essence of my being? Where actually you exceed or go beyond all the cultural givens. So this is a self, and this is also why we call this a sacred space. I think if we can connect with each other from that space, actually we discover that we are all in a way the same, although we are all unique. Therefore we can connect on that level, and then our beliefs or our cultures or our patterns don't get in the way, basically.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. And then out of that, we go back into the world. And that's what Melanie means. Like, then you can actually discover what you must do. There lie deeper answers to the questions. Yeah.
This kind of source where you get your inspiration, where you don't know what to do, and then like something new can start, and then
I think that's absolutely inspiring to know that the next generation after mine think in that way.
And this is called the lemniscate process.
Lemniscate.
Like an eight.
Yeah.
And it means like the one part of the eight is like the inner part and the other is the outer part, the action part with the world. And we can often go in circles that we kind of like keep going.
So either in the
activism
world all the time or in
or
ourselves.
Only, yeah, only
gosh,
self-development,
yeah, true, yeah.
Meditation, but it needs both.
That's beautiful.
That's the thing of balancing the inner and the outer engagement.
So in that sense, you could say it's an activism that's really standing for humanity. And but the way to do it requires actually really working on ourselves. So in that sense, it's a very different activism than the one we're used to, which often stays in the outer circle and needs actually to also look at what do I need to transform in myself, what capacities do I need to develop so that I can even find the right answers and that we can find the right answers collectively to these challenges.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also probably one reason that we are here is that, I mean, understanding all this is one thing, but really practicing it is something else. And I think that's one reason why we traveled so far, to meet each other, to support each other,
becoming this person we really want to become and to support each other.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely hope for the world, and there's people like you in it, and that you're facing. We are all facing, but I'm older than you, so I'm near the end. But you're going to be here at the end of the century, probably, when lots of things have been predicted that are going to be difficult.
Yeah.
So I think it's absolutely amazing to know that you have you recognize that and want to do something about it, something good. You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig, and this is the Herbal Medicine Show.
It's a dark and rainy, cold and wet day in Sussex. I wonder what it's like in Stoke-on-Trent, where I have rung up my friend Christopher Menses-Troll, because he has written a huge book about herbal medicine that I'm interested in knowing more about and sharing more about. So, hello, Christopher.
Hello.
What's the weather like where you are?
It's very similar to where you are up here in Staffordshire, although we're not so far north as many might think.
No snow or reindeer up there yet? Or... So, Christopher, this book of yours, it's called Herbal Medicine. What's the whole title?
Well, the whole title is Herbal Medicine, Keys to Physiomedicalism, including Pharmacopoeia. Physiomedical ideas are vitalistic, so we're dealing with the vital energy of the body, the subtle vital energies, which make everything work automatically in the body and mind. And when you have that sort of vitalistic philosophical model, you can treat people more holistically than just saying, we'll give you peppermint for wind. We need to look back and say, well, why is the wind?
So vitalistic, does that mean sort of increasing, trying to balance or increase every person's vital force or vitality?
Right, yes. It would be a matter of... improving the general energy in the body, because when someone gets ill, they have certain deficiencies in their bodies. So the body doesn't work as well as it could. the vitalistic concept is to stimulate energy to the particular area of weakness.
How do you find out, you know, where the area of weakness is?
Usually a person has symptoms.
That's true.
So let's say they continuously get or suffer with a catarrhal problem. If our health is run down, we can be subject to more infections. So the catarrhal problem could be due to a liver disturbance, gallbladder disturbance, or poor functioning kidneys.
Okay.
Now, first light, that might not seem very tangible. There might appear to be no relationship between the organ problems and a chronic catarrhal problem.
Yeah.
But we know that body will try to throw out any waste or toxins, impurities that it doesn't want. They might be environmental toxins. It might be any chemical with pesticides or things in foods.
Mm-hmm.
The body might hold on to it and put it in a fatty body, or it might try to remove it through mucous membrane.
Yeah.
So that's where then the infection can superimpose as the body tries to get rid of the catarrh.
I see.
Because there's a lot of infection and bugs in the air all the time.
Yeah.
But we only succumb to those when we're run down.
Yes, isn't that true?
Sometimes when the immune system's flat, and the immune system can be flat because emotionally we might be disturbed, we might be stressed. Stress and anxiety often pull us down, and then infection can superimpose itself, and then we can't get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if all the organ areas that I've mentioned, including the skin and the lungs as well, if they're working properly, our body eliminates all the toxins, all the waste properly. Remove the waste and strengthen the organ area.
And how do you do that? Do you do that with herbs then, to giving laxatives or something?
We can use some nutritional foods and we can use the herbs. One useful food and herb remedy is linseed. Linseeds act as a bulk laxative. They don't make you go too much, but they will actually move the waste out naturally without you actually knowing.
And how do you take linseed? Is there something you have to take water with it, or?
Yes. If you can take a dessert spoonful of linseed mixed up with water, or you can put it into bread or cakes, or you can put it into porridge, or you can grind it up and put it into porridge or on cereal. But I prefer to have the seed whole and mix it in. I put it into bread, and it gives it that slightly nutty flavour.
Very interesting. So, could I read that in your book? That
you
particular
could,
trick.
Yes, you could. There is a section on catarrhal disturbances, and the remedies. Linseed is just one remedy.
Yeah.
Although we do have certainly a lot of others, depending on the cause. So naturopathically, we'd think, well, we would use more green vegetables, more kale, more broccoli, more spinach to help the body get rid of its waste, because they're non-catarrhal foods.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd use herbs, things like we could use peppermint. We can use a peppermint oil to rub around the sinuses. That helps you breathe easily. We can use an inhalation with thyme and peppermint,
mm-hmm.
which is very effective.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
And it certainly makes you cough and sneeze and removes all the mucus and the catarrh from the sinuses. And then we might use herbs like ground ivy or hydrastis or echinacea to help cut down the infection, neutralize it so that the body can then heal the mucous membrane, mm-hmm. along with your organ remedy.
So
or
it's like a double approach. You help the body remove the waste, and you also put in some natural antibiotics to
We try to work on a number of different avenues to get healing going.
So in your book, is it divided? I know that I've seen your book. It's quite a big book. It's how many pages is it?
How many pages?
Yeah.
I think there are about 660 pages. And the second half is a full materia medica, and that is a pharmacopoeia of the 400 of the typically used plants in herbal medicine. We've picked and collated information on from all around the world, with referencing and research from all over the place. And what I did find interesting is that the modern researchers of 2018 agree with things that were written in 1500, 1600, or even right back to Hippocrates, people who were originally looked at plants and found the healing properties. The modern researchers agree with what they found then.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's very important to remember that the modern research is only the last, 100 years? But there's history of use going back thousands of years.
Exactly.
That research is now confirming.
That's right. I think there can be no doubt that the herbs are certainly powerful remedies to use. If they don't appear to work, it's because the person is probably poorly, you know, and needs a lot of treatment to pull them back up from where they've got to in their health, you know.
Yeah, I think because that's a very good point. So that's what the physiomedical approach does, is it, as far as I understand, and what you're saying, that the physiomedical approach is to increase each person's vitality enough to be able to have be helped by individual herbs.
Right, yes. We bring up the level of vital energy, and the tissue level will then become cleaner, healthier, and function properly. And so then disease can't hang around, and bugs and infections can't hang around.
I think that's a really beautiful way of looking at health and disease. So where can I buy your book, Christopher? Can I get it on Amazon like everything else?
Yes, it's available. You can get it through bookshops, but more direct is to order it on the website, which is rainbowherbs.co.uk. There's information about both books there, this large one, which is a 2.3 kilo book, and the smaller one, which is a slimmed down version. Wherever it went to in the world, it's usually there within a week.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thank you very much, Christoph, for giving me your time, and I'll look forward to reading your book.
Nice to hear from you, Kirsten. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here we have Ashley Ramsden, and I know that Ashley tells the story of Scrooge. Is that his name from the...
That's right, yes.
In the Forest Row Community Centre on the 8th and the 9th of December.
That's right, and I'll be in Holland, actually, fairly soon. I've gone to Holland for about the last 15 years with this story, and so I'm in a theatre there, the Spau Theater. That's in The Hague, and I think that's on the 21st to the 23rd in that theatre.
And I have just caught you on your way to Sweden to tell the story, but we'll keep that for later because you have got other plans for us today in aid of the Emerson Glass Greenhouse project.
That's right. Yeah, I was actually thinking of a Dutch-related story because for them, just as important as Christmas itself, in fact, more important, I would say, is the St. Nicholas Day on the 6th of December. And I love it, the fact that it's such a family affair there, and the whole country celebrates and gets together by writing poetry for each other. So it's a kind of very light-hearted way of celebrating each other.
It's interesting that you've chosen the Dutch connection, because I happen to know that the greenhouse, the glass greenhouse that Trude, the gardener, is really keen on, comes from Holland, because they are obviously... They are the greenhouse masters of the earth. And they have found a second-hand glass greenhouse in Holland that they are hoping to get transported to Forest Row. So that's even better, isn't it, that you are...
Oh, that's amazing. That's great. There we go. It all ties in. Well, okay, here's a story that actually... comes from a Dutch colonial town that later became known as Albany in New York. And there once lived in that town a baker, a famous baker, a master baker, by the name of Van Amsterdam. And Van Amsterdam was as honest as he could be. And each morning he got up and he checked and he balanced his scales and he took great care to give his customers exactly what they needed, exactly what they paid for, not more, not less. And his cakes and his buns and his bread were just impeccably made. And people would flock to his little shop from miles around. He was always busy. People trusted him because he was just a man of his word. And his shop was never busier than in the days before Christmas when the Dutch celebrate St. Nicholas. And his St. Nicholas cookies or biscuits made of gingerbread iced in red and white looked just like St. Nicholas as the Dutch know him, tall and thin with his high bishop's hat and his long red bishop's cloak. Well, one St. Nicholas Day morning, Van Amsterdam was just getting ready for business when the shop door flew open and in walked an old woman dressed in a long black shawl. And she said, I have come for a dozen of your St. Nicholas cookies. And so Van Amsterdam counted out 12 of the biscuits and he started to wrap them up. But the old woman reached across and stopped him. She said, I've come for a dozen and you've only given me 12. Madam, said Van Amsterdam, everyone knows that a dozen is 12. But, said the woman, I say a dozen is 13. Give me one more. Now, Van Amsterdam was not a man to suffer fools gladly, and so he said, Madam, my customers get exactly what they pay for, not more, not less. Then you may keep your cookies, she said. And she turned on her heel, and she walked out the door. But before she left, she turned, and she said, Van Amsterdam, however honest you may be, your heart is small, and your fist is tight. Learn to count right. And with that, she was gone. Well, from that day, everything seemed to go wrong in Van Amsterdam's bakery. His bread rose too high or not at all. His pies were sour or too sweet. And his cakes crumbled or they were too chewy. And, of course, his customers noticed the difference. And before long, most of them were going to other bakers, other shops. "That old woman has bewitched me," said Van Amsterdam. "Is this how my honesty is rewarded?" And a year passed by, and poor Van Amsterdam, he grew poorer and poorer. And since he sold a little, he baked a little, and his shelves were soon nearly bare. His customers were slipping away one by one. And finally, on the day before St. Nicholas Day, not one customer came into his shop. And at the end of the day, he sat there alone, staring at all his unsold St. Nicholas biscuits. "I wish St. Nicholas could help me now," he said. And then he closed his shop and he went to bed. Well, that night, he had a dream. And in his dream, he was a boy again. A boy in a crowd of happy children. And there in the midst of them was St. Nicholas himself. St. Nicholas on his white horse, standing beside him, his baskets filled with gifts. Nicholas pulled out one gift after the other and handed them to the children. But Van Amsterdam noticed something strange. No matter how many presents he passed out, there was always more to give. In fact, the more he took from his baskets, the more they seemed to hold. And then Nicholas handed a gift to Van Amsterdam. It was one of his own St. Nicholas cookies. And Van Amsterdam looked up to thank him. But suddenly it was no longer St. Nicholas standing there. Smiling down at him was the old woman in the long black shawl. And Van Amsterdam woke up with a start. Moonlight was shining through his half-closed shutters as he lay there, thinking to himself, "I always give my customers exactly what they pay for. Not more, not less. But why not give them more?" So the next morning, St. Nicholas Day, he got up early and he mixed his gingerbread dough and he rolled it out. And he molded the shapes and baked them. He iced them with red and white to look just like St. Nicholas. They were the best ones he had ever made. And just as he had finished, the door to his shop flew open and in walked the old woman with the long black shawl. "I've come for a dozen of your St. Nicholas cookies," she said. In great excitement, Van Amsterdam counted out 12 cookies and one more. "In this shop," he said, "from now on, a dozen is 13. "You have learned to count well," said the woman, winking at him, "and you will surely be rewarded." And she paid for the biscuits and she started out. But as the door swung shut, Van Amsterdam looked again. It seems as though his eyes were playing a trick on him, for he thought he glimpsed the tail end of a long red cloak. And just as that woman foretold, Van Amsterdam was rewarded. When people heard he counted 13 as a dozen, he had more customers than ever. In fact, his wealth grew and grew to such an extent that the other bakers in town began doing the same thing. And from there on, the practice spread to other towns and throughout the rest of the American colonies and, as a matter of fact, throughout the world. And that's why, to this very day, people say that a baker's dozen is 13. And people all over the world still speak of the baker's dozen and that small act of generosity that is with us to this day.
Excellent. That's a fantastic start to the festive season and the season of generosity and good cheer.
I found that story from the wonderful storyteller Aaron Shepherd, who is very generous with his stories that he's found and crafted in his own way. And you can find his website under his name, R.M. Shepherd. And there are other stories that are there that he just, in the spirit of St. Nicholas, I think, actually, just passes on to the world for people to use and to spread and to share.
How wonderful.
So I felt that I should mention his name.
Wonderful. Another aspect of the spirit of generosity.
Exactly.
It's nice to share, isn't it? It's the nicest thing.
It is.
Thank you so much, Ashley.
You're welcome.
Happy travels to Sweden and everywhere else.
Well, it's great, and happy Christmas season to everyone everywhere.
We've come to the end of this week's Herbal Medicine Show, brought to you as usual by Heartwood Herbal Education. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Berta Kühnel and Chris Rickwood for talking about the medicine wheel, to the Sacred Space Girls for explaining their research project, to Chris Menses-Troll for inviting us into the world of physiomedicalism, and to Ashley Ramsden for telling the story of St. Nicholas. Thank you to Nick Rowley and Allegria for the music, and to Steve Thomas and Nick from the Heartwood production team for superb technical support. Wishing you all a happy and peaceful festive season. Glædelig jul, as we say in Denmark.